To strengthen us in our journey towards God's kingdom, we have the blessed opportunity of hearing words of exhortation, and this morning through our brother Greg Bennett. Brother Greg, please.
Good morning. So my reaction to the sunshine of the last several days brings to mind the picture of Malachi where the calf is allowed out of a stall into the pasture, and it points forward to the kingdom when it'll be absolutely glorious. But having gone through, you know, a rather depressing winter for somebody that works outside, to have that sunshine, there's an extra hop in your step, and it feels good. And something that my mind does, and it did again this morning when I went for a walk, and there's a bit of nip in the air, and everything seems so new and so glorious, and your mind is sort of sharpened to God and His blessings. The first line of the hymn of 418 comes to mind. New every morning is the love. Our wakening and uprising prove. And it's an acknowledging of thanks. And I'm sure each of you have your own verse that you might say when things are really good. Goes on to say in hymn 418, through sleep and darkness safely brought, restored to life and power and thought. New mercies each returning day around us hover while we pray, new perils past, new sins forgiven, new times to serve our Lord in heaven. I bring it up now because that extra bounce and that joy, it's obviously from the Lord, the creator of heaven and earth. And as our brother Fred so ably did in his prayer, brings us our minds to that blessing. And this thanksgiving and praise is due to Him. And we have in James 5 and 13 says, is anyone among you suffering? Let him pray. Is anyone cheerful? Let him sing praises. And so it is that my thoughts are going to be drawn out of Psalm 50, but we'll arrive there in a moment. Another verse that came to mind in our remembrance of God, not just on sunny days, but at all times, is render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. It's an important part of our walk to remember to render to God those things. Our faith largely dictates our praise and thanksgiving to God. Sadly, because we often lack vision for spiritual things, we fail to see the hand of God and then render to Him that which we ought to do. On the other hand, we have no lack of sight for things in the world and what we should render to Caesar. A Sunday school teacher years ago passed on to me one day something that happened in her class that fits this to a T. Her students had had a revealing discussion about the amount of taxes their parents were whining about having to pay. And I have to say that maybe one child was mine. And this wasn't a good thing. Not a good thing. The point is that there are few of us who aren't acutely aware of what we owe the government, and we give accordingly. But many of us have trouble seeing what we should render to God. we have a hard time understanding what the currency is. I think it's an important question to ask as we examine ourselves this morning. What have we rendered or given to God in the past week? Hebrews 13:15 and 16 says in part, "Let us continually offer up a sacrifice of praise to God, that is, the fruit of lips that give thanks to his name, and do not neglect doing good and sharing, for with such sacrifices God is pleased." We're in a land of abundance. We can soon forget where our blessings flow from. Talking to this morning to the farrier, she was asking what my talk was going to be and said, "The blessings that we take for granted each day, and we should return praise for them." And so we're in this discussion. She says, "Oh, I think this is a good point." She says, "There's somebody in the showbiz that's giving money, and they're giving money to a school in Africa over the schools in the U.S. And why is that? It's because the children there and the parents there are making these huge sacrifices to get their kids into the school. Whereas in America, there is a criticism that she wasn't doing it there. There isn't that sacrifice. There is almost, it is a right." And I told her in part the verse that I thought of, and it's in Proverbs. Just lost one of my notes. It's in Proverbs chapter 30, and this is common to man. Chapter 30, verse 7 through 9. "Two things I asked of thee. Do not refuse me before I die. Keep deception and lies far from me. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is my portion, lest I be full and deny." Excuse me. "Lest I be full and deny thee and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be in want and steal and profane the name of my God." We are a rich nation. We are blessed. And there is that opportunity for us to forget God's blessings. Let's now take a look at Psalm 50. Starts with, in verse 1, "The Mighty One, God, the Lord, has spoken. And summoning the earth from the rising of the sun to its settings out of Zion, the perfection of beauty, God has shone forth. May our God come and not keep silence. Fire devours before him, and it is very tempestuous around him. He summons the heavens above and the earth to judge his people. Gather my godly ones to me, those who have made a covenant with me by sacrifice." So we get this idea that there's judgment coming, and that we as Israel are in a covenant with him. "Those who have made a covenant with me by sacrifice." We, of course, are part of a new covenant, a covenant through Christ. Verse 6, "And the heavens declare his righteousness, for God himself is judge. Hear, O my people, and I will speak. O Israel, I will testify against you. I am God, your God. I do not reprove you for your sacrifices, and your burnt offerings are continually before me. And this is a key verse. We'll come back to this in just a moment. I shall take no young bull out of your house, nor male goat out of your folds. For every beast of the forest is mine, the cattle on 1,000 hills. I know every bird of the mountains, and everything that moves in the field is mine. And it sort of helps put this in perspective. Just down the road from us, there's a pond, and there's just an enormous quantity of birds, and people come there to watch these birds. And you just think that quantity, and these are God's. He knows them. And it goes on to say, for the world is mine, and all it contains. Shall I eat the flesh of bulls or drink the blood of male goats? And verse 14. Now I'd rather, actually it says, offer to God a sacrifice of thanksgiving. So God is saying, everything out there, it's my creation. It's what I've put there. You in verse 8, I give you credit for your sacrifices, and your burnt offerings are continually before me. You bring the right animal. You bring it to the right place. You bring it at the right time. You have great form. But you're only giving me back what I put in your hand in the first place. And I think if we look at the parable of the talents given to the three servants by the master, he entrusted these talents to these three servants. And we know one was given 5 talents and he gained 5 more by the time the master came back. And they were said to be good and faithful. Enter the joy of the master. The same thing happened for the second one who was given 2 talents and ended up with 2 more talents. But we come down to that fellow with 1 talent. His master had given him something. And he took that talent and he buried it in the ground because he had a fear and a respect for his God. Maybe not a respect, but he had a fear. Master comes back, gives him back exactly what was handed to him. There was nothing generated, and we think about generated from the heart. There was no change. It was all in form. It wasn't as if this man with the 1 talent had squandered what had been given to him. He had just done nothing with it. So in verse 14, it says, offer to God a sacrifice of thanksgiving. I couldn't care less about your, well, within reason, your form. I want something back that's deeper. And so we'll look for a moment at this thanksgiving offering or peace offering. It was the 5th of 5 offerings under the law. And of course, all these pointed towards Christ. Now, the 4 previous dealt with consecration, atonement, and restoration. Now, you figure with these 3 achieved, consecration, atonement, and restoration, the offerer would now be free or be in a position to enjoy the peace of God. Those 3 points were finished, and now I could enjoy the peace of God. Looking at the Hebrew word in Leviticus where it says peace offering, we have the word shalem. It incorporates not only an agreement and tranquility that we'd have with God, but also welfare, joy, and happiness. Thus, the offering was a joyous recognition of all that God had done for his people and a gladness of fellowship shared by priest and people with the Creator. And that's what was missing in the sacrifice of Israel at that time. So the sacrifice was not to make peace, but to celebrate peace already made. Now we have a measure of peace now, but it'll be fully appreciated when Jesus returns and we are united in immortality. Now let's look for a moment at the mechanics of the sacrifice. The sacrifice entailed offering a bullock, a lamb, or a goat without blemish, either male or female. An interesting point, it was the only sacrifice where this was allowed. There's food for thought there. The fat around the entrails, the liver, kidneys, was removed and burnt on the altar. It was the Lord's portion. Another interesting note I found in my studies was that this fat would not be there in sufficient quantities in animals that were undernourished. And we can see the parallel. We examine ourselves this morning and ask, are we well nourished? Deep inside, in those vital places of heart and mind where God's word abides, working in us what is pleasing in his sight. It's much the same principle as with the 10 virgins. Matthew 25:2 says, and five of them were foolish and five were prudent. For when the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them. But the prudent took oil in flasks along with their lamps. We see this lesson there of them having sufficient stored faith with them. Now, looking back at verse 14, it says, offer to God a sacrifice of thanksgiving and pay your vows to the Most High. Now, if we look at Israel, the chief vow which God urges on Israel to fulfill is that which they made of obedience at Mount Sinai, where they said, all that the Lord hath spoken, we will do. Are we not bound by our baptism to put on the new man, walking a spiritual walk full of faith, love, and obedience to God? All that the Lord hath spoken, we will do. There is in Hosea a couple of relevant verses talking about the love of Judah and Ephraim, described as a morning mist. What can I do with you, Ephraim? What can I do with you, Judah? Your love is like the morning mist, like the early dew that disappears. Therefore I cut you in pieces with my prophets, and I killed you with the words of my mouth. My judgments flashed like lightning upon you. For I desire mercy, not sacrifice, and acknowledgement of God rather than burnt offerings. An acknowledgement of God rather than burnt offerings. Once again, not so concerned about the form, but actually the deeper things. going back to Psalm 50, verse 15. And call upon me in the day of trouble. I shall rescue you, and you will honor me. So there's a growth there. There's a faith that is developed. Verse 16, but to the wicked God says, what right have you to tell of my statutes and to take my covenants in your mouth? Got a verse there that I'll read for you out of Isaiah 29, verses 13 and 14. Then the Lord said, because the people draw near with their words and honor me with their lip service, but they remove their hearts far from me, and their reverence for me consists of traditions learned by rote. Therefore, behold, I will once again deal marvelously with this people, wondrously marvelous, and the wisdom of their wise men shall perish, and the discernment of their discerning men shall be concealed. In other words, there was a time when I did these marvelous things for you to bring you around to seeing things in a spiritual level. But you've totally rejected that. Therefore, I'm going to do another marvelous thing. The wisdom of your wise men will perish, and the discernment of their discerning men shall be concealed. Lip service. Something we know to avoid. Verse 17, for you hate discipline and you cast my words behind you. When you see a thief, you are pleased with him and you associate with adulterers. You let your mouth loose in evil and your tongue frames deceit. You sit and speak against your brother. You slander your mother's son. So rather than having these lips of praise to God, they instead tear down their brothers. These things you have done, and I have kept silence. You thought that I was just like you. I will reprove you and state the case in order before your eyes. Now my printing truly is too small. Once I put these on, I can't go back. They were so lost with the statement, you thought I was just like you, that they had lost all knowledge of what God was. They're to the point of forming God in their own image with a personality like them. God won't worry about that. But God says, no, I will reprove you and state the case in order before your eyes. Now consider this, you who forget God, lest I tear you in pieces and there be none to deliver. Psalm 103, verses 1 to 5 speak about this forgetfulness. Bless the Lord, O my mouth, and all that is within me, bless his holy name. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget none of his benefits, who pardons all your iniquities, who heals all your diseases, who redeems your life from the pit, who crowns you with loving kindness and compassion, who satisfies your years with good things so that your youth is renewed like the eagle. And on it goes. Consider these things. In verse 23, he who offers a sacrifice of thanksgiving honors me. New King James Version says, whoever offers praise glorifies me. So it is our duty, as pointed out by God, to honor him, to glorify him, And the fact that it's repeated from verse 14 shows that this repetition means that it's important. How often is our spiritual sight clear so that we see the benefits of the Lord? Count your blessings, many a child has heard. A practice, if done, might start to show us how many we are taking for granted. Foremost of these blessings is the exalted relationship we have with God through Christ, as sons and daughters and servants. We should render to God, our Father, to whom we are bound, not only thanksgiving, but also loving obedience of heart and life. In Malachi 3 and 8, there's a sobering message to Israel that can just as easily be us. Will a man rob God? Yet you are robbing me. But you say, how have we robbed thee? In tithes and offerings. One of the commentaries that I was looking at put it this way. The prominence given to thanksgiving is worthy of our careful notice. There is no duty so commonly forgotten. God showers down his benefits upon us with both hands, large and free, and we receive them as a matter of course, and never consider whose love has bestowed them. And thus, in our unthankfulness, we rob God of his honor. We need to see the importance of thanksgiving and praise and give it the place in our lives that it deserves. We can see how the mind focused on the spiritual will bring forth an accompanying praise. It is an exercise of godliness, something that God would have us do for the whole of our life. Verse 23 states, he who offers a thanksgiving of holiness honors me. Israel had to come to a place where form and ceremony had taken the place, Israel had come to a place where form and ceremony had taken the place of spiritual worship, much like we see in the religions around us, caught up in the same empty ceremonies. Therefore, not to draw them down, but simply observe that it's a common trait of mankind to look more at the form than at the deep things. So we must be vigilant, that we don't fall in the same trap. The idea is that the worship which God requires is praise. It is not the mere external act of homage. It is not the presentation of this table this morning that we have the best quality wine, the best quality bread, the best in silver. It is not the mere bowing of the head. It's not the outward form. It is that which proceeds from the heart and which shows that there is a spirit of true thankfulness, adoration, and love. We draw now to the memorial table, a time of praise and adoration and thanksgiving. Let us reflect on a God who showers down his benefits upon us with both hands, large and free. Psalm 34 and 8 says, O taste and see that the Lord is good. How blessed is the man who takes refuge in him.